One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Follow us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our community on Facebook by searching The Gays Are Revolting.
And support the show and access our after shows and live streams at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod.
Hello, how are we?
Hello.
Still recording remotely. Still can't see your beautiful faces, but yeah. So nice to
hear beautiful
voices.
Yeah, I think next week we're recording in person, aren't we?
How exciting.
Hopefully.
What have you guys been up to? I mean, now that things are kind of easing up little by little.
I took my boyfriend down to my parents' place.
Have they met him before?
They'd met him just before all of this started. And we FaceTimed them a few times during lockdown. We had like dinners via FaceTime.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah, we went down and we got so drunk that my partner... fell asleep in an office chair. And mum and I had to wheel him down to the spare because we couldn't wake him up. We had to wheel him down to the spare room.
And your parents like, wow, Tom's finally met his match.
No. He was in good company. They were just as bad. Like, mum and I were falling over trying to get him down.
That's
to the spare
room. That's so funny.
Classy Jasper's family dinner, you know.
Love it. I've seen a lot of your family photos, Tom.
Have you?
What? He's like, I'm looking at them right now.
I'm looking at them.
In a frame.
Your mom's house is really nice.
My mom and dad's house.
But yeah, if you could tell your parents to do something about the internet connection, it's just...
creeping me out.
So I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but there might be an injectable PrEP on the way, which is pretty exciting news if you're a gay man and unafraid of needles, which I am not. I'm not a gay man.
No, most people are scared of needles. I know why.
Yeah, terrifying. But yeah, so there's been like this big development in a study at HIV Prevention Trials Network, or commonly known as HPTN. They've announced recently that global trials have shown that a long-acting injectable of a drug that sounds like it's Simlish, I'll say it. It's cabotegravir, or Cabla for short.
Simlish. I just thought what you were saying.
Yeah. So you get this injection every 2 months, and it lowers HIV transmission amongst cisgender men and transgender women who have sex with men. So the study revealed that Cabla was found to be 69% more effective at preventing HIV when compared to the normal daily PrEP pills.
It's pretty incredible, isn't it? I didn't think we'd be seeing anything in our lifetimes that was more effective than PrEP.
It's right?
A pretty exciting thing. I thought it was going to be like the Implanon?
Yeah, like a rod thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that freaks me out. And it's like that foreign object being inside you.
I love
you guys
that.
For a fine, but...
Is it, that's the same as the, Luke, you're talking about the thing that sometimes diabetics can use with insulin, is that correct?
Birth control.
Oh, sorry.
It's like
an injectable
birth control, but maybe there's one for diet. I'm not huge in the diabetes community.
It's. I mean, the studies they've done have been pretty extensive, and they've also, I think, a really interesting thing is that they've been done in lots of different countries, and they're doing studies in Africa as well, which is obviously, you know, somewhere that HIV and AIDS is greatly affected. So it's exciting to see that they're looking at launching and making sure that it works for people in Africa.
I mean, reducing dosing from 365 days to like literally six times a year—that's pretty.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it?
So like, often,
often one of the and of course, maybe we should break a step back a little bit for if anyone that's been living under a rock for the last several years, PrEP, of course, being pre-exposure prophylaxis is a medication that you can take to prevent contracting HIV if you're exposed to it. So it's like 99.99%
effective.
Effective, thank you. Effective in preventing the spread of HIV, but it's taken once a day in pill form. So, of course, there is also there's issues with that where you might
forget,
you might run out. You know, you might think you're going to be able to pick some up on a certain day, but then you get to the chemist and it's closed or they've run out or whatever. And then
some people don't like swallowing pills.
Yeah,
so, yeah, that as well.
An alternative. It's nice to have options.
This, you know, one injection every 2 months would be a game changer for people that are in those positions. So yeah, it's hugely exciting, I think.
And it also highlights why things like the religious discrimination bill are, it's super important not to have those things in place, especially if you need to go to a GP to get that injection. We want to make sure that there's no discrimination happening, or that anyone
they're refusing to stock it or something. Yeah,
refusing to provide that service to anyone that required it or wanted it would be pretty
I'm also going to assume that one injection is probably easier. And look, I don't know anything about it. I might be wrong. But one injection is probably easier to manufacture than 60 pills. Well, it would take in 2 months. So for those people in countries that are on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, this might mean that the medication becomes a lot more available to people that need it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. There's some other news. It's not as exciting, in fact, quite disappointing news. I don't know if you saw it, but the Australian Christian Lobby are back. Christian by name, but absolutely not by nature. We haven't. I was thinking we haven't really heard a huge amount from them since the marriage equality postal survey. Really.
Yeah, they've been in the shadows, girl.
Yeah, they've been licking their wounds like Voldemort before he comes back. And, <Jesus. laughs> anyway, sorry, my references are real because I'm just getting through Harry Potter. I'm only up to the point. they've announced that they're going to be hosting an online panel to discuss gay conversion therapy and the forthcoming ban that's coming up in Victoria. Yeah. They have a really good knack of doing these talks and these things which make you think, oh, yeah, great, a conversation about something really important.
It's going to be open review.
No, when the Australian Christian Lobby are hosting these talks, the conversation goes the way that they want it to go. And they often stack the panel in a way.
I didn't know it was hosted by them. I thought
they're
just
running
the individual up. Was but that's a no bueno then.
Yeah, exactly. And they often stack it in a certain way. And interestingly, with this one, one of the people that they're putting on the panel is Dr. Caroline Norma, who you might have heard about before because she has popped up due to her controversial beliefs. She's an RMIT university lecturer and identifies as a lesbian and is also a left-wing radical activist, which are usually some of my favorite words. Like, usually I would be very excited to say that a lesbian left-wing radical activist is. She's also been boycotted before from various conferences and events due to her transphobic and also anti-sex worker views as well, which is pretty nasty. And she was even campaigning for other lesbians during the marriage equality postal survey to vote no, because she believes that marriage is a conservative and I guess an oppressive institution, which, you know, is a fair enough belief, but to actively then go and vote, like,
I feel like it's so much internalized homophobia. And I think she even described lesbianism as a genital fetish at one point.
Well, I think she was talking about like modern lesbian culture and gay male culture as having a genital fetish, which is a weird, like,
so weird.
I love talk, of
strange
course.
Strange way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so obviously she's quite a polarizing figure for LGBTI people. She hasn't actually expressed any opinions that I could find, at least, on gay conversion therapy. So I guess we have to fairly say that it is possible that she will go on there with our best interests at heart, but I think it's fairly, you know,
the people
fair
are very
to assume
upset
that that's not the
this,
case.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I was reading on Star Observer that they got in touch with RMIT, who, you know, are looking into it, but there's only so much they can do. You want to be careful not to be stifling free speech and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they did also point out, which is fair enough, that they did win an award for, I think, best employers as far as diversity and inclusion goes.
RMIT
RMIT, yeah. RMIT, yeah. So they are very proactive generally in caring.
Not the Christian Lobby.
Not the Christian Lobby, no.
My friend has undergone conversion, like, years and years of conversion therapy. And the long-lasting ramifications of that are just mind-boggling. And it's something I don't think you could ever truly understand unless you've been put through that process. No. But for this friend of mine, they're essentially starting their life at 35.
That's rough.
And it's so fucked to me, conversion therapy, because it actually kind of attaches itself to your belief system so strongly that by the time you realize this is all bullshit and I need to get out of here and this isn't going to work, you have to dismantle your whole belief system in order to reject that part of it, which is it's okay for me to be homosexual. So I think we should be keeping our eye on these sort of conversations and when they pop up, because
definitely.
The fact that this practice is still legal in a lot of parts of the world, the effects that it has on young gay men is immeasurable in a bad way, unfortunately.
And yeah, just for anyone that's questioning how, you know, you might sound like we're trying to oppress the Australian Christian Lobby's opinions or whatever, they are quite clear in the fact that they believe that the ban is a bad thing and that they are rallying their members to write to politicians and things to try and have this ban overturned and that sort of thing. Of course, there's been extensive studies that have shown that conversion therapy is awful, and thankfully that seems to be the information and the medical advice that the government are now taking. But yes, they are still campaigning for the ban not to come into play. I think the other dangerous thing with it, you know, again, when we're talking about free speech and stifling conversation, that sort of thing, the problem with her being on this panel is that it's really bringing attention to the Australian Christian Lobby. And it's putting them in the spotlight again, and it's giving them power again. They are actually an incredibly small group of people. They really do not represent the wider community, Christian community, at all. They're a small group of people with large, silent, you know, anonymous donors. And they're evil.
And they're evil. They're horrible people.
I was just focused on large, silent donors for some reason. That sounded kind of sexy to me.
You're like large boners?
I think I've been alone for too long, lady. All right. Speaking of other famous transphobes, this weekend, the same day this episode releases, is the Gay Super Bowl. It is the season 12 finale of Drag Race, RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm so utterly fascinated by this season. And
because it's had so many issues.
Oh, yeah. God.
How many hurdles it's encountered by She Who Should Not Be Named.
She Who Eats Pie.
Been sort of paper mache'd out of so many different episodes to a worldwide pandemic, then meaning that we're getting our first ever Zoom lip sync finale.
I just I'm so curious as to what the fuck is going to be like. Wanting to see a Zoom train wreck 2 days in a row, we're actually doing a live thing on Sunday.
That's a nice plug, bitch.
Isn't that great?
Look, first of all, I will say that maybe you should listen to me more often, because I boycotted the show before this season started, and look how it turned out. But secondly, I'm kind of excited to see them do their lip syncs in the house. Like, it's actually going to – it adds a creative element to it. I mean, I won't be seeing it because I didn't watch it, but I think it does give it a creative element where they can now incorporate their house and do some funny, quirky stuff with the jumping out of the oven or the laundry cupboard or something like that.
Isn't it like unfair advantages because, like, people have different layouts and houses and stuff?
Yes, so that's the idea of creativity, is you just look, you use what you've got around you. And I mean, it's such a drag thing is to have to use it. We've been watching, you know, Lexi Gaga perform in her living room on Friday nights. You know, Lisa Mann's been drinking in wigs and that sort of stuff. I don't know if you watched Granny Bingo on Monday night, but Aisha Buffet performed a number in my kitchen. The drag world has adapted quite beautifully to online streams, so I'm kind of excited to see what they come up with. Not excited to see what RuPaul looks like or is wearing.
Oh, that's the real tease. Like,
what? I just want an explanation. Like, why did he have a weird blue gimp mask?
Well, the shadiest tea is that his Botox and like work has like sort of drooping because of being in isolation for so long. And so they sort of chucked a GIMP mask over and called it a day.
That is the natural way to fix anything, really.
It's so funny to me what a train wreck, or like how many obstacles I've had to overcome. And I agree with Tom wholeheartedly in that obstructions and restrictions sometimes are the absolute.
I mean, at least it's different now.
Brilliant.
At least it's like mixing it up.
You know, when you're doing a project or something and you can do anything in the world, you're like, what the fuck do I start? But then if you take,
if you add a restriction or something, it makes you
more you're like, you can only use red or whatever. Your mind just goes in all these
absolutely.
Weird. It's also my birthday on Saturday when this comes out.
Well, the planets are aligning.
Yeah. So I was going to invite five friends around, but I don't have five.
Yeah,
so
I was going to say the restrictions don't really affect your birthday, do they? Because
no
one would have come anyway.
Three people like I usually do.
The only difference is that the people you live with are locked in the house with you. And
they can't leave.
My birthday is also the reason why you all need to be kind to me on Sunday when patrons of our Patreon can join us on our third live stream.
Yeah.
Sign up for our Patreon if you haven't already, because the live streams are really fun and people chat to us and they have their own little, sometimes they have better conversations in the little chat box.
Yeah.
We like, set people up last time. Please. You'll remember last time we were like, you should date that guy.
Oh my God,
like,
yeah.
Hello. So maybe they're like in love or something now.
Maybe we'll get an update this Sunday.
Tune in and find out.
But now, Mikey and I are going to interview Ross Anderson, who's a senior investigator in the image-based abuse team at the eSafety Commission, and has some interesting things to say about online revenge porn and what to do if you find your nudes have been shared illegally online.
I better tune into that one.
Now, in a recent episode, we discussed a website hosting nude images of gay men, including some of us, which resulted in a request to remove the thread from the website. Today, we're joined by Ross Anderson, who's a senior investigator at the image-based abuse team at the eSafety Commission, which is a federal government agency focusing on the removal of harmful content online. Thanks so much for chatting with us, Ross.
No problems, Tom. Thanks for having me.
As a lawyer, can you firstly clear up the legalities in this space for us? For example, in Australia, is it a criminal offence to share nude or sexual images of a person without their consent?
Yes, Mikey, it is a criminal offence, both federal and state and territory law. So most state and territories have criminal laws for threatening to share or sharing intimate images without consent. So some of them have imprisonment terms of up to 3 to 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's something that's kind of dealt with by police.
Yeah.
And I suppose I want people to understand the difference of what we do. So we have a different role, and our role is to give people an option that isn't to go down the criminal justice path. They can contact us, and we can help them with getting things removed online and also taking action against individuals that are involved.
That's amazing. I had no idea that existed.
No.
Now, being photographed without knowledge is one thing, but for people that do send consensual sexy selfies, say to an intimate partner or, you know, on a hookup app or something, that then eventually end up online, is that dealt with any differently? Are there different rules around that than a photo being taken without consent?
No, that's still image-based abuse. So there's nothing wrong with people sharing, you know, intimate images with their partners and whoever, but it's when people, you know, share that without that person's consent online and on share it to whether it's a website or onto a chat board and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if that happens, it's really important that people get in contact with us. So they can get in contact with us through our website. So esafety.gov.au. And they can report what's happened and then we can give them advice on what to do from there. So we like to tell people all their options. So one thing we can do is we can work to get the images removed from the site, so we can contact the sites on their behalf and get the images removed. We can also take action against, you know, accounts that might be sharing. So we can get in contact with the platforms that host those accounts and get them to take action. But we can also take action against individuals as well. That could be a formal warning, an infringement notice where we give people a penalty. But what we're really focused on is changing people's behavior. So we really focus on the behavior change and people knowing what they're doing is wrong. You know, with a formal warning, that works quite well in people realizing that they shouldn't be on sharing intimate images of someone that have been given to them. Mm-hmm. You know, whilst I talked about there being these options, so there's like these criminal laws that exist, so that have recently kind of come into effect in most states and territories. A lot of people that experience image-based abuse, they haven't, you know, been in the criminal justice system before. A lot of people have never been to a police station and had to give a statement and things like that. So it's a pretty, you know, overwhelming process for them. So we offer this, option to people to come to us, and they can submit a report online to us with their, we can talk to them via email or we can talk to them over the phone, where they can tell us what's happened, and then we can offer advice to them about what their options are. One being they can obviously go down that police route, but they can also we can also help them as well and get some kind of action taken on their behalf.
Now, we've talked on the podcast about whether exposure to sexually explicit material can desensitize our community, mostly because of our close access to nudes on dating apps and hookup apps and that sort of thing. But do we actually know why LGBT people are so disproportionately affected by image-based abuse?
Well, Tom, our research shows that 1 in 5 Australians who identify as LGBTI have experienced IBA, compared to 1 in 10 Australians. So, unfortunately, the research doesn't tell us why, because it was looking at the prevalence, not the motivations behind it. But I suppose I can say anecdotally, you know, from what I've seen, this is not backed up from research, but I would say that, like, the community are kind of pioneers of online dating. I mean, people have been using online dating apps for a long time. Sharing nudes seems to be part of the culture of meeting people. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I think it's really important to people understand there's nothing wrong with, you know, people sharing intimate images with people. There's something wrong when people on-share it to other people without their consent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we know that, you know, now that's how a lot of people meet people. They meet people online, or a big part of the way people, you know, form their relationships is they do share intimate images, and that's fine. But it's making sure that when someone does send you an intimate image, that you respect the fact that that person has provided that to you, and that you don't send it to your friend, or you don't put it on a message board, or you don't put it on a website where people collect these kinds of images.
It's a really good message, because I think often people do feel guilty that, like, there's sort of an incorrect culture of blaming people for taking those photos in the first place. And you're right. There is nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with having good faith when you are consenting to send your own pictures.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we see sometimes these groups, you know, from the community where people are sharing these images. They're like, you know, there's all these different images of people from the community, and I think, you know, there's lots of members on these groups, and I think all people have been sent them. I think it's really important that people call out that and say, hey, like, there's a person in this image. This person gave you that image not knowing that you're going to, you know, put this on this message board or post this online. Think about that. And, you know, of course, it's illegal to be doing that. That's the number one thing. But also think about that there are people behind these images, and that person shared that with you for whatever reason, but they didn't share it for you to, you know, share with other people. So I really think it's important that, you know, if we see this kind of behavior happening in our community, that people call it out and say, hey, there's a person behind that, and that's wrong.
That's it. And we didn't mention the name of the site that was trying to gather up our images earlier, sort of last year, but what sort of action can be taken against individual websites, or is that sort of harder to control?
So what happens is someone will make a report to us. So let's say what happened with you, you'd let us know what happened. So you'd report on our portal and we'd get all the information. You'd send us the URLs of where the content is, and then we would look at the site. So, and we would see, you know, where the intimate images are, and then we would contact the site and request removal. So we can issue removal notices to sites. But as you can imagine, the majority of sites that we do, well, the vast majority of sites that we do come in contact with, they are based overseas. Mm-hmm. But we're lucky we've had about a 90% success rate in having content removed. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that if anyone does find their images online, like what happened to you, is that they let us know by reporting to us, and let us do the work of approaching the site. So as you said, I think in your podcast was that, you know, the site was, you know, pretty dodgy and had some particular requirements that you had to meet to get things taken down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really common thing on these sites. So, and we don't want people to approach these sites and share their personal information and things like that. Mm. So we want people, if they ever do find their images or any of these kinds of sites, to let us know, and we can help by, you know, reaching out to them and getting things removed. And if we're not successful, so sometimes, you know, we really try hard. If we, you know, the site doesn't respond, then we, you know, speak with the hosting providers and things like that. We can also speak with Google about de-indexing the information so that it doesn't come up on any searches and things like that. So it's pretty difficult to find. You would have to have the actual URL to be able to find the images and things.
That's interesting. Right.
And Ross, are you familiar with some of the motives of people who are sharing these non-consensual images online? Like, is it sort of only limited to hateful, like, ex-lovers out for sort of vengeance, do you think?
So we did some perpetrator research, and it did show there was a couple of themes. So so there is that kind of vengeance, kind of retribution kind of aspect, but then there's also people wanting to boast about, and, you know, try and increase their social standing by saying, oh, you know, this is who I've been with, or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But then there's also people that, you know, want to laugh at people as well for sending them pictures. So they kind of see it as a kind of entertainment thing. So I think there's different kinds of categories, and we definitely see a broad range of those. So we do see, you know, someone has met someone on a dating site and the person didn't respond, or the person didn't meet them on a date, and then they go and threaten to share their intimate images or share their intimate images with people. But then sometimes, you know, people create these groups where they share all these images to be like, hey, look, you know, I've been with this person, or that kind of thing. So there is pretty distinct kind of categories, but unfortunately the research has shown that, you know, most perpetrators are men, and that they're not aware of the laws, and they don't show any remorse for what they do. So that's kind of something also isn't really a positive thing either.
I was quite shocked to hear, having gone to, because I went to a Catholic school in the early 90s, so I was very surprised to hear that there's been a bit of a push in schools as early as primary school to engage with kids in respectful relationships education. Is image-based sexual abuse factored in there at any level in school?
Well, it's really important. And as young people are increasingly communicating online and meeting people, image-based abuse does need to be factored into what is a respectful relationship and sex education. So I suppose, Tom, it's a bit of a mixed bag with the way that schools deal with these things. Some are doing really well and some aren't. But we're trying to increase teachers' awareness of what's happening. So we offer webinars to teachers all around Australia, and they're really popular, where they teach, you know, teachers about what to expect and what's happening, and you know, how
I guess one of the hard things, quite often kids are more advanced with the technology than the teachers are because it's such new technology. So it probably would be harder, especially for some of the older teachers, to sort of be aware of the signs or are even aware of what can be done online.
Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of them are doing these webinars, because they realize they don't have those skills, and they really want to learn about what's happening for young people. We also have a guide for schools as well that we've brought out, so that, you know, when this kind of happens, so when we have like peer-to-peer kind of sharing, which happens, so that schools know how to deal with, you know, who to get in contact with. So that being, you know, getting in contact with us and also the police when this kind of things happens between peers at their school. But we also develop some resources as well for parents and students and teachers, so they know, you know, that we're here and that they can get in contact and what process, the best process is for dealing with these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ross, on a bit of an unrelated matter, I'm keen to hear your opinion. We've seen all sorts of false claims fueling conspiracy theories of late. It's a big question, but what sorts of things can we do to protect ourselves from misinformation online?
I know there's been lots of crazy information with this COVID going on. So I suppose the best advice that we give to people is people just stick to reliable news sources. You know, if you see something on social media, you know, maybe check it on a trusted news site, making sure that you look at different kinds of news sites so that you have a broad range of different kind of ideas, and be a critic, and I suppose just be a critical thinker. So, you know, if something seems strange or, you know, pretty out there, most of the time it is, and to, you know, you can check that by looking at different media sites, and there'll be other stories and things like that on it. So I think that's our best advice. And I think also I know a lot of platforms now have a self-reporting tool. So if you come across any kind of news sites on social media or wherever it may be, you can also report that news and that it's not real, or that there could be some issues with its facts. And I think that like the platforms will look into it and decide whether it is or not.
Mm.
Ross, it's been really, really great speaking to you and really, really informative. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. So if people want to sort of find the commission, how do they find you?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, esafety.gov.au. If they want to report image-based abuse, they can use the report function, which is on our main page. Well, our site is also a bit of a one-stop shop to keep Australians safe online. So I don't know if you have any parents listening, but it's also good for parents. There's lots of resources for parents and talking with kids about things like starting the chat about sexting, for example. But also, I don't know if any of you have had, grandparents or older people in your lives that have been trying to get connected during COVID. I've had my partner's dad. He's not very good with the video calling. Well, he wasn't before COVID, but now he is.
He's getting good at it, yeah.
Yeah. But I managed to use the Be Connected program, which we have on our site as well, which has some really good tutorials that are really easy to follow for older people, so that they can get connected with video calling and stuff, because people can be really isolated during these crazy COVID times. So esafety.gov.au.
Thanks so much, Ross.
Thanks.
No problems. Thanks so much for having me.
You should celebrate yourself every day. But some days, you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So I don't know about you homos, but I love me some Disney films.
Never heard of them.
Can I just ask, Mikey, when you say Disney, like what's, because everyone has a different mentality of the era of Disney that they associate with Disney. What's your, like, when you think Disney, what is Disney
films? For me, Disney films are like the 90s films. So like Lion King,
Mulan, yeah, Aladdin.
Sleeping Beauty, Aladdin.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's like black and white Mickey Mouse.
The fuck
Steamboat Willie.
Yeah, I'm the same. But then for a lot of people, it's like, for people that are a bit younger than us, it's Pixar. But then for kids growing up now, it's going to be like Star Wars and...
Star Wars and Marvel and like all those other things.
I feel like those animated ones we grew up with are kind of timeless, and I feel like they're kind of force-fed to like young kids now as well.
Totally.
Because like all the parents grew up with them. So
but no, I think still gonna be obviously like... we all grew up with Disney, and everybody pretty much throughout the world knows Disney. But like as a kid, like you just sort of watch these films and you're just like, oh yeah, these are great. I really, really love them.
Eat them up.
And then like as time has gone on, more and more sort of Disney stuff is becoming more LGBT inclusive. But
at what price?
What price are we all paying? Like, honestly, like they have, unfortunately, it's like a sprinkling of queer characters throughout like the Marvel world.
Pathetic the way they do it.
Yeah.
It's always kind of just like squinting your eyes and looking in the background or like listening out for like one word used by people, which is kind of annoying to me. Like the thing that gets to me is always like the headlines that annoy me. They're like so clickbaity. They're like first ever gay character and blah, blah, blah. Like I think there was like a scene in the newest Star Wars and there was like so many articles about it being like first gay like couple in Star Wars, blah,
the
blah, blah.
Couple.
And then like in the last like 5 minutes of the last like movie ever, there's like a lesbian kiss in the background. Like if you squint your eyes, I was like, wow, that was so worth waiting for.
And like even in Toy Story, they have like the lesbian mums in the background. I think it's Toy Story 3 at like the kindergarten, and all the like parents were like, what are you doing? You can't have gay women in films for children.
I thought you were going to say the lesbian mums toys came to life, and I was like,
no.
Oh,
God.
Could you imagine?
My God.
I don't think anyone expects Disney to include Mickey getting raw dogged or bukkake. You know, like, that's not the expectation that the LGBT community have. I think the expectation they have is to have realistic three-dimensional portrayals of queer characters in their media. But is that really, like, I'm just going to be a bit of a stinky brat. Is that really realistic considering the world that we live in? And is the fact that they're even taking the risk to include these background lesbian characters that will mean their film will get banned in a number of countries.
Or edited in other countries, yeah.
Yeah, is that enough? Because in my opinion, I always think gay people, and historically this has been true, and it's true, I think, of all of us, is we will seek out and we will find gay media.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. And also, I feel like we find a lot of gay themes within their movies, even if they're not necessarily trying to
meant
put them
to
in.
Be there.
So we kind of like search for them and force them in and find them sometimes. But I mean, even like the online kind of trend of like Elsa from Frozen being a lesbian, like gay. And like there's the whole movement of the hashtag give Elsa a girlfriend thing, which is funny, I think. It is really nice to see fan bases of these films kind of seeing themselves in things that weren't necessarily like meant to be there and kind of making the most of it, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the gays everything they want.
Have you guys seen the newest clickbaity headline of like the first Pixar gay lead ever on Disney Plus? They have a 10-minute short film called Out.
I watched it last night.
I watched it like just before recording this, and look, it is very cute.
I definitely shed a tear.
I was like, oh, so like, oh my God. And like the animation. But yeah, it would be nice to have something longer as well.
Yeah,
I feel Disney, they're like just so afraid to like scare off their audience. So they just feed us these little breadcrumbs by just giving us little bits, like, and then saying they're going to commit to something. Like they had that whole TV series based on the book Love, Simon called Love, Victor. And that like that was everywhere being advertised that they were going to have it on Disney Plus, and it's like some queer representation. And then they before it came onto Disney Plus, they moved it over to Hulu, so now it's not going to be on Disney Plus at all.
No,
and it's so stupid because they go on about the adult themes of queer stories and things like that, and how it's like a family friendly place, but then they'll show things like The Mandalorian, a Star Wars story, and the first episode they show the first episode, the opening scene is a bar fight and someone gets like decapitated through a sliding door. So I don't know what family themes they're like chopping and choosing, but it's doesn't check out for me.
I think it's because in the mainstream, well, in a heteronormative perspective, a lot of fundamental, like, conservative people find it very difficult to separate being gay or identifying as homosexual, separating that from the act of raw dogging and barebacking. When they think of being gay, they think of sex. And so therefore their brains immediately are, keep this away from my children. And that's why their reactions are also visceral as well, because they can't disconnect the fact that you can just be gay in it and have gay themes or gay characters, and it doesn't necessarily lead to, you know, for
they
my
also
life.
Seem to think it's catching.
Catching like they like as soon as you watch some gay content, that's it, you're gay.
Oh, you're gay.
But I was like wondering to myself today, like, is there something in that, like, maybe the gay world is seen as so adult because the only experience anyone has of the gay world is adult stuff. So like kids aren't seeing happy stories or anything, and then like queer kids are like looking up gay porn and things like that, like because it's all, there is only adult stuff, so then that's the only thing.
But that's what I'm really liking about like Cartoon Network with like Steven Universe. Like they have queer characters on a cartoon show that shows kids that, like, yes, like there are characters of your age group that are also gay or lesbian or trans or bi or gender non-conforming. Like that's the problem. Like Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon are doing a really good job including like gay and queer characters, which is really good. It just would be nice to see Disney actually embrace it a lot more. I think because they are a bigger platform as well. They are such a huge conglomerate. It is based solely on
money. It's
such a nice word.
It is a really nice word.
Like, it's all about money.
It's a hard thing to say Disney are homophobic, because if you look at what Disney is and who works for them, like, we're looking at and we're looking at the history of Disney. I mean, I am certain that if you look at things, you know, the Mary Poppins and the Lion King and that sort of thing, I'm quite certain that there were definitely songwriters and script writers and colorists and
there's a lot of gay involvement
that were definitely queer. Like, Disney films are art. They are visual art, and queer people are often attracted to art. So I'm sure that there were a lot of queer people warning who would have loved to be able to put those stories and things in there. But it is a beast of itself, and it has evolved so much. It has been around for an incredibly long time as well. I think Disney started in, was it the late 40s or early 50s?
Yes.
And no one's saying that they should have put queer characters into Mary Poppins, because we get that at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was not a thing that was ever going to happen. No one, I think it's also fair to say that it would be too much to expect Disney in the 90s, when it was really a kids' family cartoon kind of vibe, to have been putting in there when no one else was doing it. I get that as well. But it is now evolving again. It is going through another identity change, I guess.
Yes.
And it is taking on things, you're right, like Star Wars and like The Mandalorian, and having a much wider platform too. It used to be that you would see Disney at the movies or when you rented a VHS.
That's
it's
true.
Now everywhere. It's in your life constantly. So they do, I think, now have a responsibility to be showing a much more diverse range of things. I mean, I think they have the potential to, too. I think it did have a race issue decades ago, and I think that is something that they have learned to have a much better representation in their shows and their movies.
Yeah.
And I hope they're going to continue to evolve and catch up.
Well, I think so Disney now have a new CEO. There was a shareholders meeting in March where, like, an anti-LGBT activist sort of stood up and was just like, why are our stocks falling? Like, we're all losing money. It's because you hold all these gay pride events and you represent LGBT people. It's not family friendly. The CEO turned around and was just like, it's happening because there's a pandemic. It's not because
we own
we have to close businesses because of a disease, not because of queer people whatsoever. And the CEO turned around and said, Disney as a company want to reflect the diversity of their fan base through their work. So, like, I think with this new CEO, I think we will be seeing more and more gay characters throughout their films. Even if they aren't the lead, they're moving in the right direction, which is great.
In some ways, you know, I fucking despise Love, Simon, and I hate that kind of, like, Disneyfied version of real world, you know, bliss. So in some ways, I actually kind of prefer the fact that gay characters are sort of just existing in these worlds and in these universes, and they're not, like, pushed front and center and been like, everyone, let's have a moment and sit down and talk about why these two characters are gay. To me, growing up, visibility is also about normalization. And in some ways, just having these characters in the background or whatever is a very subversive way of normalizing the LGBT character and experiences in these stories by saying that it's not a plot point. It's not important that they're lesbians. They just are lesbians and they're in walking through the scene and then they're gone.
I think that's fair enough, but I think it bugs me when they hype it up so much and then it's just that.
Yeah,
so
like, no, you when mean, I was like half expecting Beauty and the Beast, the remake, to be set on Fire Island or something, because they all these media releases and news articles about how it was going to have big gay characters and then it was like a side glance. And again, as you said, Mikey, a limp wrist.
Like, I want him to jump off a table and land in the splits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to get my dick sucked at Disneyland.
Jesus Christ.
I reckon mascot. Sorry, I know this is a little off.
Even get let
Have
in.
You noticed that's the subculture of Disney gays as well?
Oh,
they're sort of like
they're like the Glee people.
They're like the horse girls of the gay community.
I'm like, you know.
I feel like Disney there's liking gay. Disney, and then there's like a weird obsession with Disney, and it's really odd to me and I don't get it. But yeah, I've seen some like weird Disney weddings at work before.
It's a thing, right?
Like everything, like, themed like Mickey Mouse. Yeah, it's weird.
I just realized Disney isn't at homophobic because they gave us the Mickey Mouse t-shirt that I wore in my GIMP look for our iPod show.
Yeah,
gay. Disney's in our cover picture.
Oh my God, they are too.
We're sponsored by Disney. There's nothing gayer than sponsoring a podcast. I spoke to my dad last night and he was like, I get that you had to be gay, but do you have to do a podcast as well? Like, do you have to do both of those things?
So that's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening to us again and for subscribing to our Patreon. Our after show this week is actually going to be our live FaceTimey recording thing that we're doing on Sunday.
Zoom.
So
Yeah. Well, it's not actually Zoom.
It's, I don't think it is Zoom, but yeah, same thing.
It's
same
not Zoom. It'll be through the Patreon platform. Yes. So you will, anyone that's subscribed as of Sunday evening will get an email with a little
Please
link.
Subscribe and do it because it's going to be our last one for a long time. So get in
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Think of questions. You can ask us questions. It's a real yeah. chill chat, just like a catch yeah. up
Come
with
have
us.
A drink. And you and-
yeah. Mikey, hey. I hope your night is as glorious as your eyes. They're amazing.
Oh, thank you,
I said as that to you like six times last week.
Yes, you did.
It's so good to see you, boys. I can't wait to see you on Sunday.
Yay.
I'm so
excited. And then in real life next week.
Yes.
Very exciting to leave my house.
Until okay. then,
bye.
Bye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.